Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impoga, and this evening we'll talk about the role of election observers in Africa. And with us tonight is Suleiman Mgula, who is joining us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman. Hello? Good evening, Suleiman. Are you there?
I'm there, Douglas.
Oh, yes. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're welcome. Also joining us tonight is Dr. Monini Molera. He's a doctor, writer, and columnist. He joins us from Toronto, Canada. Good afternoon, Dr. Molera.
Hey, good afternoon, my dear brother. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're very much welcome. Now, as I said, we're talking about the role of election observers in Africa. Ever since the late 1990s, international observation of elections has become so widespread that refusing to admit monitors is almost an outright admission of fraud. International election observation has become a norm. Almost 85% of elections in new democracies are observed. Even in semi-democratic countries, they still invite election observers. So let's start from that point, Dr. Monini Molera. How important are these, the role of these observers?
Very important in the sense that, first of all, they provide, hopefully, an independent, impartial eye on the processes to ensure that truly there is freedom to choose, that it is transparent, that all the usual shenanigans do not take place to influence the outcome. Mm-hmm. But secondly, they also provide an opportunity for people to look at your processes and give you feedback that would help improve situations that did not go quite well. And incidentally, election observers are not just invited to the emerging democracies. They are invited to countries like here in Canada. Election observers do come. Outside election observers do come. I know they're holding elections in Norway, I believe, shortly, and there are already election observers that have been invited to go there as well.
I see. Suleiman, according to Dr. Molini Mlera, the crucial role of them is the providing an independent, impartial eye to the whole process. But something some people have observed that in Africa, almost every election, despite how flawed it is, these observers, especially the international ones, seem to have uniform observation that everything has gone fine, even where things have not gone so well.
Yes, Douglas. First of all, as you have noted in your intro, that observation of elections has been going on to the continent for a long time. So if it was just beginning, we would have doubts of what the impact has been. But having gone for quite some time, now the continent has got sufficient time to assess the impact of that observation. So much as ideally the intentions are good, but given the time which they have been taking in the observation of elections, I think by and large on the continent we have reached a situation where we feel that it's very difficult to pinpoint at the intentions of this observation as far as the continent is concerned. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to know whether they are observing the elections whether the observation is for the interest of the observers or it is for the interest of the nations in which they observe the elections or it is for the interest of their individual partners in the nations where they observe elections. Mm-hmm. Because, number one, you'll find that in some countries, they have been there several times and they have given recommendations and recommendations and recommendations. Sometimes they are recommending the same things, and it is repeated and repeated and repeated and repeated. And you wonder why they continue to observe election, whereas there is no change at all.
Dr. Molera, there are those who even who say that some of the observers already have a friendship, or they are known to the incumbents especially. So they come there just to provide some authenticity to the whole exercise.
There is no doubt about that. Certainly, when people come in and the we'll use a specific example like we just had in Kenya. We had Mr. John Kerry from the United States leading a delegation from a group of election observers from here. And the United States enjoys a very comfortable relationship with Kenya. And certainly when Mr. Kerry was Secretary of State, he enjoyed a very healthy relationship with the incumbent president of Kenya. Now, without any, I'm not leveling any charge against Mr. Kerry, but I must wonder to what extent he would be looking at the Kenyan situation with a completely impartial eye. Now, having said that, it's probably difficult to find individuals who are completely unbiased. And I think that is where you need enough variation, a broad spectrum of people representing different countries, different interests, so that they can cancel out any individual biases that might exist. The other problem is, of course, some of these countries where the elections are taking place are led by very, very crafty people who know that they can offer a red carpet welcome and great comfort and the various tourist attractions and an easy life to election observers who are human beings after all. And those individuals can easily be bought. Perhaps unintentionally, they may find themselves selling their souls, and so that they tend to rubber stamp a situation that is has not been fair. Mm-hmm. Others, but I think, you know, the real difficulty is this. Election observers are coming in towards the end of a process that has been ongoing for years. Where a regime has the means of controlling the electoral process, the electoral commission, the security, the distribution of the electoral materials, the campaign processes, the financing, all those things, election observers come in, and there are a few of them, they really come in and they are looking for the gross abuses, not the micro abuses which make the difference.
I see. Suleyma...
I wanted to add on.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
What I wanted to say is that in addition to what Doc says, it is even quite difficult in some cases to point out, to appreciate what they are coming to observe. Because when you look at the continent, some of these regimes have been in power for a long time. Some of them are even illegitimate. The systems are skewed. The legal framework, the electoral legal frameworks are skewed. The institutions are skewed. The whole playing field is skewed. And then they come and observe. What are you observing when the whole process, there is no system at all to observe? One example, Uganda. From 1996, I don't think there has been a free and fair election in Uganda. 1996, 2001, 2006, 2011. And you find the Electoral Commission appointed by the president, the judiciary appointed by the president, security forces appointed by the president and partisan. Mm-hmm. So then the legal framework, you have got the Public Order Acts, you have got other laws which are implemented at will by those who are in the security forces. So these irregularities are observed in 1996, they are observed in 2001, observed in 2006, recommendations are made by 2016. The whole system is rotten, but still there are observers who come and observe. What are they going to observe? The same in Cameroon, the same in Central African Republic, the same in DRC, the same, thank God they didn't go in Rwanda, the same in Ethiopia, but they continue. So as a continent, the citizens have come to doubt the intentions of the observers.
I see. But perhaps, gentlemen, we should make a distinction. There are several types of observers. There are those domestic observers whose goal is to check any irregularities in the election in real time. Then there are those partisan observers by political parties. Then there are so much claimed international observers who are there, and they are not to fix irregularities, but just to identify where the election meets international standards and usually issue a report on their findings. Now, Dr. Malera, normally the local observers, domestic ones, tend to have a different report than the international ones. Is that surprising?
It doesn't surprise me, because the domestic observers tend to have an ear, or their ears more to the ground than the international ones. They have a longer presence, and therefore they know the nuances, the tricks that have been played. But even there, they really may not achieve what we would desire them to do. Mm-hmm. For example, the situation that we just saw in Kenya. If it is true that there was tampering with the results transmission process, tampering with the computers, then the best local observers would be no better than the international ones in identifying a problem that clearly must have been carried out by someone within the electoral commission.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing in Uganda last year, where there was an allegation by the one of the opposition candidates, Dr. Kizza Besigye, that there was a separate elections returning unit housed in a house in a place in Naguru, one of the suburbs of Kampala, where, in fact, results were allegedly being transmitted from that house to the official electoral commission. Now, that is a kind of thing that would involve high security operations by the supporters of the president, and where internal and external election observers would not be able to identify that that is where the cheating is taking place.
Yes.
In the end, I think that it takes us back to the societies themselves. The people, the citizens, do the citizens have the political education, the socialization, the willingness, the awareness of their rights, and for them to protect their democratic rights, to protect the results as they are being announced or as the tallying process is taking place, to protect all the aspects of an election so that in the end their will is not sabotaged by these very clever state operators who are going to be very, very difficult to, I'm afraid, to be affected by the international or local observers.
I see. Suleiman, don't you think that the communities have a sense of what's going on? Like in the mention Uganda, people knew about this so-called independent tallying center because one of the previous officials had mentioned that had happened before. But I think what they lack is a voice, don't you think? Because yeah, nobody hears them.
Precisely, Douglas. The citizens are very much conscious. They are very much aware. They are very much ready. That is why, the way doctor has said, the leading opposition leader in Uganda in 2016 was informed by the citizens, and they went to the house in Naguru where the hacking was taking place. But what was the result? The opposition leader was arrested, he was incarcerated, and was only released after the the swearing in of the new president, of the incumbent president. So what do you expect? Instead, the international community, including the observers, were informed. They were on the ground. Apart from that, even other cases, you have got other cases where the MPs, those who are contesting, unasked pre-ticked ballot papers for both presidential and the members of parliament. They displayed them to newspapers. They showed them to the people. Even I remember very well, if we remember very well, General Obasanjo was informed and he saw, and he was one of the people leading the delegations. They see these things. Instead, the very countries which send observers, after such irregularities, after such integrity of election has been tampered with, if we had used the terms in Kenya, they are the first to recognize the new government.
Mm-hmm.
They are the first to attend the swearing ceremony. There is no sanction whatsoever. That is why we are observing, because we thought an ordinary citizen would think that, okay, if we fail, there is an impartial eye. If the impartial eye is let to know, then maybe something can happen. But over years and years and years, they are shown these irregularities, but there is nothing which is done
mm-hmm.
apart from just recommendation.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, gentlemen, hold your thoughts. Let's take a short break. We'll be back again to continue our discussion of the role of election observers in Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a three-nation Africa visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zambia, and Tanzania. Shaka Sali talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered, reporting on democracy in Africa. On the Road with Shaka, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing the role of election observers in Africa, and our panelists are Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst, and Dr. Munini Mulera, doctor, writer, columnist, and I'm your host, Douglas Mpoga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Dr. Mulera, talking of all these observers and people getting... saying that maybe they're not as good enough. You mentioned the recent case of Kenya, where the Supreme Court has ordered a rerun of the election. It took the courage of an independent Kenyan Supreme Court to put in question the initial stamp of approval of these international, especially international observers. And what picture does that give the populace? That, I mean, if there had been no Supreme Court ruling today, President Uhuru Kenyatta would have had his second term.
That's right. There is no doubt that the Supreme Court of Kenya has passed a vote of no confidence in the election observers, because many of us depended on the reports of the election observers to interpret the outcome of that election. And indeed, I sympathize with the governments that congratulated Mr. Uhuru Kenyatta and recognized his election, because the internal and the external election observers were fairly unanimous in the report that the election had been free and fair, and there was an electoral commission that had reported that these results were free and fair. So what do we expect these governments to do on the official level? Now, in the realistic level, the governments should recognize that in countries like ours in Africa, the it is the rare situation where you have uncontested elections, where you have truly free and fair elections. So perhaps they should take a step back and question the legitimacy of these processes. Is it just a ritual? Is democracy a question of holding some sort of elections every 4 to 5 years and congratulating ourselves that we have a democratically and freely chosen government? The reality is no.
I
would actually like to... I've come to a point of giving up on the short-term ability of our electoral commissions to conduct free and fair elections. And it doesn't even matter how they are chosen, because ultimately the government of the day controls them. And ultimately the government of the day also has means of controlling processes even outside of the electoral commission. So, Douglas, I would like to propose for consideration that where it comes to elections in most African countries, now there may have to be exceptions based on their track record, but that the United Nations controls the process. We find funding for the electoral commissions that are United Nations run entities, where you've got international staff, that the leaders of these organizations are from the, again, a cross-section of countries, that within each state, for instance, in Kenya, you would have now members of the Jubilee and members of the NASA as part of the staff, but they are not running the process. They are not running the computers and so on. So that in the end, we have at least a better provision of democratic opportunities to the voters. It sounds desperate, but really we are dealing with desperate situations, because every 4 years you have people being deceived that they are holding an election when in fact the election is being managed by the people who count the votes, not those who cast them.
I see. I've seen some emails and that connection that help is needed. But again, somebody pointed out that even if that arrangement was in place, you need a Supreme Court, like institutions like the Supreme Court of Kenya, to help. Because you see, if it wasn't for the Supreme Court, if we had institutions on the continent that stood their ground, that were independent, for instance, it would be different. It's not by accident that it's the first time that an election has been annulled in Africa. So, Suleiman, if there are good, strong institutions, for instance, what's happening across the continent, West Africa, where they are rioting and protests against changing of the constitution, these things would be happening.
Precisely. And this is all the result, these are the results of the laissez-faire affair, the laissez-faire attitude of the election observers, of not taking things seriously, of always jumping or rushing on conclusions. But yes, there were some irregularities, but they were not enough to affect an election. How do you say they were not enough when pre-ticked ballot papers have been discovered, when an opposition leader has been arrested before the votes are cast. So then from there, again, you make conclusion and say they should go to the courts if there is any problem. How far are you sure that the courts are impartial? So I think all these ones have affected us, leading us to the desperation of the citizen. The way you have said now, people are protesting in Togo, in Cameroon. People want to break away. In Ethiopia recently, they want to break away because of the continuous laissez-faire attitude of both the internal institutions and then the people like the external observers. If I may go to Kenya briefly, for example, in Kenya, it was just very clear from a security point of view. It was just very clear, and given the history of Kenya, that there was something wrong even before they cast the vote. Douglas, the security or the internal affairs minister was killed just a few days before the elections were carried on. Number two, the IT manager was killed. Not only being killed, but he was tortured, which means some information was picked from him. Number three, the NASA parallel tallying center was raided and destroyed. And the external experts, the international experts who had gone to help them to manage their tallying center, they were deported immediately. Another two Ghanaian experts who were also coming to help the NASA group, they were arrested from the airport, also deported. Before the elections were held, you could see that there is something wrong. How could the international observers just rush and say the elections were free and fair before even considering? If it was any international country, if you kill an IT manager and you have tortured him, before the elections were held, Kenya was supposed to have an international committee, security experts, first of all, to determine. Let's say from Scotland Yard, helped by FBI, plus the internal security institutions, to find out what was the cause of death, why was he killed, and how it would affect the elections.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was a sensitive office. So how could you carry on? The minister dies, the IT person dies, and then the offices of these other people are raided. So the whole security environment was toxic.
Mm-hmm.
I believe if it was an international country, things would have been done better.
I see. Lastly, we're running out of time, Dr. Mlera. The Kenya Supreme Court faltered the Electoral Commission for the what happened. The same commission is supposed to organize another election in less than 2 months. Do you have hope that they will pull it off this time in a free and fair way?
Free and fair, I am very pessimistic. The only insurance is that they know they are being watched. They know the Supreme Court is very serious. And they hopefully the two contending parties, Jubilee and NASA, will have a stronger presence with, really watching everything all the step of the way. May I quickly say that the Supreme Court of Kenya, I think one of the greatness is the way the judges are elected. The president constitutionally appoints them, but he really appoints those that have been pre-selected by the Judicial Commission. They have been thoroughly interviewed. They are not people who have been handpicked by the president to rubber stamp him. Unlike in, say, Uganda, where pretty much the Chief Justice and the Supreme Court justices are ex-party officials who have now been transferred to the Supreme Court, and therefore we are not surprised that they always find in favor of the state.
Suleiman, 10 seconds. Are you optimistic about the upcoming election, Kenya election?
Douglas, 34A, 34B, some of them which were scanned, they were not signed. Some of them did not have the seal.
Yes,
for sure, within the secretariat, some people tampered with the system. If those people are not cleaned out, we don't expect a real free and fair election. Number two, the president and his vice, their statement have not been statesmanship-like.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So these statements which they have uttered, they threaten the post-election environment.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they retreat their statements and they remove the inflammatory statements, especially given that they were coming from the ICC, they were coming from a 207 violence,
okay.
they should have had guarded statements, not inflammatory statements.
We are out of time, but we shall be keeping our ears to the ground in the Kenya election. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa, and Dr. Monini Mlera, Tororo-based physician, writer, and columnist. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Well, thank you, and have a good evening.
Thank you. Our producer was Kwame Ofori, and the engineer was Patrick Dare. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.